Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 185 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my lovely hostess, Erin Paulette. How you doing, Erin?
It's been a week.
Yeah.
And people are dumb.
People are dumb.
Moving on. How are you, Weird?
It's been a weekend. It was my daughter went up. We had the long weekend. We were recording on Martin Luther King Day, and my daughter went up to Maine for the long weekend with my parents. And I went, oh boy, we'll have the house to ourselves. It'll be easy and chill, and we can live our life how we did before we had kids.
Making whoopee in every room of the house.
No comment. But yeah, and so it's one of those things of the, oh, I can get, you know, a bunch of podcast stuff done and, you know, do a few things that I need to get done. And at the same time, my wife said, oh, we can do a bunch of stuff. So needless to say, I kind of overbooked myself, and then my wife kind of overbooked us. And so this weekend was just nothing but the Herculean honey-do list. With just mountains of like literally like doing a chore while looking at another chore that needs to be done and knowing that there's two other chores in the other room. And it's just one of those like, oh my God, it just didn't slow down. So, but I think I've got most of it done. I got a bunch of crap that needs to get done tomorrow too. Ugh. But that was my week. I didn't feel like I ever sat down or relaxed. So, but it's Monday now.
Yay.
But my daughter went ice skating. So there is that. And we had New England weather just doesn't know what to do. It was 5 degrees on Sunday. It is 50 degrees today. And I think it's supposed to drop down to 20 tomorrow, but it's just one of those like, make up your darn mind. I just want to put on a coat and walk out the door. I don't want to have to make a selection. I mean, the good news is, though, that massive temperature switch did not come with a thumping sinus headache as it usually does. But
I had one of those. That was Saturday afternoon and evening for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sorry you went through that. Mm. I only had a mild hangover from workshopping the PB&J cocktail that Xander put into my mind, and just I couldn't let it go until I figured it out. So I have invented a cocktail that tastes like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay, why not just eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich while drinking liquor?
That is the question, and that's why I gave that like bewildered laugh. Is like Xander and his impish nature knew that he could get the balls rolling in my head, and I would have to try to figure that out. So, because it's not a great, you know, great or amazing cocktail. It's not a unique experience. It is literally tastes like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, specifically a soggy peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like it's like, oh my God, like it. The neat thing about it is that, yes, you're sipping a cocktail and you're consuming alcohol, but you're also suddenly being like, I am suddenly back to like Dyer Elementary School in South Portland, Maine. And I'm just like, oh, man, like this is definitely like the little sandwich bag that had the little like pocket in it that you would tuck and unwrap into PB&J sandwich. Yeah, that was the thing.
It's I've seen recently a couple of memes about how charcuterie boards are just Lunchables for adults.
Mm.
I was imagining, you know, drinking that cocktail while eating charcuterie, and it would be, I'm an adult, but I'm a kid.
Oh, that was like a line of Robert Hess. He's a bartender in Washington, and he got a letter in for his bartending show on YouTube, asking, you know, if he had a recipe for a frozen margarita, and he kind of shook his head and said, like, you know, frozen drinks are really just kind of slushies, and alcoholic beverages should not be reminiscent of childhood. And but he and then used crushed ice instead of whole ice as a way to get a craft frozen margarita. But yeah, sometimes some reminiscent of childhood is okay, I guess. So shall we talk about some news?
Sure. Why not? What have you got for us?
Well, you've actually got something that you handed off to me, and I was amused by it, but I'd like to hear your take first, because you were the one that discovered it.
All right. So we've got an article here about how a DC Council candidate was carjacked by four men. And I know you're itching to jump into this, but there's two things that I want to point out. First of all, and this is not in the link, I'm going to try to include a screen grab, because this originally came to my attention via the Book of Faces. And as the story goes, four masked individuals drove up in an SUV. The individuals quickly jumped out of their vehicle and approached the DC candidate. Here it comes. One of them brandished an extended gun and pointed it at him, demanding his car keys. An extended gun. Now, I'm not sure what this means, because there's no such terminology, as we all know. If I had to make a guess, I would say that they're trying to express that this gun had an extra large magazine. But I could be wrong. They could be commenting about how it's, you know, it's got a very long barrel.
They could have been poorly writing about the fact that he extended the gun towards him, like he punched out the pistol, like you do. As Chance from Say Uncle always used to say when quoting such articles, layers of editorial oversight.
Indeed. And I do want to be briefly snarky here and say, well, at least the carjackers were obeying masking standards. Because, you know, they all had a mask, so even though they're pointing a gun at him and threatening him with death, he was in no danger of catching COVID-19 from them. But I don't really know why I find this amusing. I'm sure for the candidate it wasn't funny, but there's a certain amount of, here we are in one of the places that has some of the strictest gun control imaginable, where it took a freaking Supreme Court case in order to allow people to own guns there. And then, yeah, once again, criminals don't obey laws. No, someone was carjacked at gunpoint. And the fact that it was a politician, I think, is really what makes it funny. I don't think this person is going to have any sort of realization. I think, if anything, it's going to make him double down. Mm-hmm. But just, I know you're itching to make a point, so just go for it.
Well, yeah. Well, your point very well about this not landing home and having him have a realization, have a moment of clarity. No, this is, you see this with victims of like spree shootings and all that, is the people that were in favor of gun control before the shooting are now using the shooting as justification for more gun control. And the people that were for the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms do not see this as a reason to restrict people further on the ownership of firearms. It's just, even big moments like these are not major turning points as a general rule. But yeah, the thing that I have is the article that I linked has clips from it. Of course, it autoplayed for Aaron, and it may autoplay for you too. I apologize. I don't set up the crappy web programming for these. But they've hired a rapper to try to talk kids out of carjackings. And I just found this. I remember a guy that I went to college with who enjoyed all of the finery and the provided by the earth, let's say. And he always chuckled about Nancy Reagan's "Just Say No to Drugs" campaign. He might have even said it when he was smoking a joint on the I could say no. I didn't even know that was an option. Just thinking about, you know, or the Beatles. Oh, you know what? Give peace a chance. Why didn't we think about that? We could just, you know, instead of just having war for the sake of war, we could just give peace a chance. Yeah, let's give peace. It's just super duper tone deaf of these kids are not stealing cars because of like peer pressure or something like that. These kids are stealing cars because it's making them money or it's fun or it's earning them street cred. And of course, clearly the police aren't doing enough about this because they certainly don't seem to be particularly concerned about the fact that it's illegal and very violent and antisocial crime. And then also, it just happened to be I was scrolling through the Reload. It turns out that this is the Reload. This is a different one. I can't remember how this, but this popped up. In Philadelphia, they are having record high carjackings as well. And it's one of those. So this is just a growing trend.
Yes, about that. The article that we are reading is dated January 13th of this year. And in the very first paragraph, it says that in Philadelphia, there have been 91 carjackings so far this year. When this was written, we weren't even 2 weeks into the new year, and they've had 91 carjackings.
And this is just in Philadelphia, which is a large city, but it is just a city. This is not the entirety of the United States or the Eastern Seaboard or even the state of Florida or the state of Pennsylvania. This is the city of Philadelphia, 91 carjackings. Well, though, also compared to just 24 at the same time last year. So they had 24 in 2 weeks. That's, oh man. Well, that's the, that is, I don't even know what to dive into the commentary of that. But what we clearly, we need more gun control because that's the solution.
Well, fortunately, there is some good news coming out of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. although it isn't a done deal yet, mm-hmm. but courtesy of the Reload, although not John Gutowski in this case. In this case is written by Jake Fogelman. Mm-hmm. The article is Philly Democrats introduce switchblade decriminalization. And so there are three Democrats in Pennsylvania who have introduced a bill that would change the state's criminal prohibition on knives, automatic knives, not just switchblades, but any blade that advances with a button, a lever, things like that. And they're going to change them from being dangerous weapons. No, I'm sorry. They're going to change them from offensive weapons to dangerous weapons. In other words, much like a licensed and concealed pistol, it's only a crime to have it if you use it in a crime.
Which makes perfect sense.
And so it is nice to see that there's a little bit of sense coming forth. I mean, it still has to pass. It might not pass, but hey, this is an incremental positive change, and I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, and bravo for it to be Democrats. Again, I like to point out the fact that, you know, just like Republicans can absolutely back gun control and not necessarily be your friend, Democrats can make good choices as well. They're not all just, you know, evil communist overlords, as, you know, some people on the right may think. And so, again, we need to be a big tent here. We need to not prejudge somebody just because of some of their political beliefs or some of the other political beliefs they may have. Assume that, oh, if somebody wants, you know, universal health care or to raise the minimum wage, well, clearly they also don't want to keep and bear arms or want to ban all sorts of knives. And so, yeah, this is a absolute breath of fresh air. especially since so many states have already made automatic knives legal. And I will also say that the nonsense that goes on in the gun world, you know, such as the people using pistol stabilizing braces as a way to make pseudo short barreled rifles or binary triggers or all these things to get past laws that would restrict the ownership of certain firearms. There's also the same thing. I have a pocket knife that is a CRKT Vertex, and this, it looks like a standard liner lock knife with a thumb stud. But if you can push on that thumb stud all day long, I really don't get exactly how it works. But if you push down on that thumb stud and push down on the entire blade, in that the thumb stud itself is not a button, but if you push down on the thumb stud, that disengages the detent and that blade will come open. It essentially acts like a switchblade. But because you're pushing the blade and not some sort of button or lever, evidently that's kosher. And who cares? And furthermore, I have blades that have no spring assist in them whatsoever, but they're such a slick action that they seem like they're an assisted open. So the solution is just legalize it all. They're knives. Oh my God. Like, are we not humans here? Like, why would you criminalize knives? The thing that you find in the early human excavations of even before humans, what do you find? You find stone knives as the earliest tools built by man. And here we go saying, no, you can't have a knife. So great on Philly hopefully they will go all the way and deregulate automatic knives, because there's no reason for them to be illegal.
And even more good news coming out of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so it's not a done deal yet, but Pennsylvania is becoming very close to becoming a permitless carry or constitutional carry. The bill has passed both the House and the Senate, and it is going before the governor.
I'm not going to hold my breath on this one. It's a Republican-backed bill, and the governor is a Democrat, so this very well could become a partisan issue. But again, we just mentioned Democrats are pushing forward decriminalizing automatic knives, so it very well mean on this side of the Second Amendment that Governor Tom Wolf will also side with the Second Amendment and sign this into law. We shall see. Certainly, Pennsylvania's been doing some nonsense. Like, didn't they have a whole big kerfuffle about not accepting Florida's carry permit and really like doubling down on their reciprocity for a while? Do you remember that off the top of your head?
I mean, that sounds vaguely familiar, but honestly, I thought that was Virginia and not Pennsylvania.
Well, Virginia definitely did that. Where
I'm
they?
Not sure.
Attorney General Herring put that sweeping, and then he reversed it. But the sweeping change in reciprocity, where essentially, unless you had, I can't remember exactly what the test he used, but essentially, it nuked like 60% of all of the states that had reciprocity agreements with Virginia. And the further statement would be that it would also punish Virginians, because a lot of states have it written down that if your state recognizes our carry permit, then we will recognize yours. And if Virginia rescinded theirs, it very well may rescind recognizing a Virginia carry permit in those states. It got a lot of backlash, and the Attorney General ended up reversing that. So that worked out. That worked out in our favor. And hopefully this will go through. But honestly speaking, I just wanted to put through because Pennsylvania is one of those states, specifically Philadelphia. Pennsylvania's a fairly gun-friendly state. They've got a bunch of weird gun laws in there, but overall, as a general rule, it's pretty unrestricted. But Philadelphia really doesn't want to be that way. And of course, it's a major population center. And so therefore, the big cities do have a lot of political drive there. And so to see something like this going up in a state like Pennsylvania that has, that you cannot buy a handgun from a private seller there, and they've got a bunch of other weird laws. I forgot to look up some of the laws in Pennsylvania, but it's one of those states that is a free state essentially, but at the same time, you know, if you're traveling in Pennsylvania, be very, very cautious that you're going to go on the right side of the laws, because they may do some things very different from where you're traveling from. And so to see this go through, even if it gets vetoed, I think that's just a good sign that it will keep going, and it might also be emboldening to some of the other states that border Pennsylvania that may not have it yet. I mean, I know West Virginia's got constitutional carry, but what is it? Is it Kentucky? I don't know. I'm not going to embarrass myself with my not exactly knowing all the geography of the states. So
we'll start now.
Yeah. Thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome.
So yeah, I applaud the legislators of Pennsylvania for putting this forward. And if it gets vetoed, you know what? You know, send it back. And Pennsylvania is a purple state, and so you know, in theory, if the GOP has a good grip on the Second Amendment, you could probably have a pro to a governor that would be more than willing to sign this, and hopefully you can just keep sending the bill up every session until one of the times it sticks.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up on this, I've got three articles here from Ammoland that state that there are three more states that are at least in the process of becoming constitutional carry. It may not happen.
Mm-hmm.
But weird, I believe we have 22 states that are CC right now.
That's 22 or 21. That sounds about right.
I believe it's 22, and we're getting really close to that magical half number.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to drop the links in the show notes. I'm not going to talk about this to any great extent. But Nebraska, there's a hearing scheduled for next week about constitutional carry. And so if you are a Nebraskan, you want to look at Bill 773 and contact the Judiciary Committee and ask them to support that legislation. If you are in Wisconsin, the Senate committee, and just the committee, mind you, has passed Senate Bill 619. And so now that is eligible for floor debate in the full Senate, and so contact your state senator and ask them to support it if you are a Wisconsinite. And finally, Alabama, and this is the iffiest of them, because the title is Alabama may pass constitutional carry. And so they're just talking about there's a very strong support for it, and it's just something to keep an eye on. And so I find all of these very, very heartening. Plus, there's the fact that I'm hearing rumors, and at this point, they're just rumors, that constitutional carry is being considered both for Georgia and Florida. And the governors of both states have said if it comes before their desk that they'll sign it. I don't know what the political situation is like in Georgia, but let me tell you, here in Florida, good luck, because in addition to all the typical anti-gun Democrats, and I'm not generalizing here, I don't know of a single pro-gun Democrat that holds state office here. I could be wrong, but I don't know of one. But then there's the fact that you've got all the people from Miami. Now, Miami is very conservative because there's a large Cuban population down in Miami, and Cubans are historically and culturally conservative. But because the gangs and the drugs were a very big deal in the 1980s, it does seem that the vast majority of people from Miami, regardless of political party, are very much anti-gun. So that's what I mean when I talk about Miami Republicans. They are not your friends when it comes to gun laws. And so for Florida to become constitutional carry, yeah, we'd have to and it would be introduced by a Republican, but they'd have to overcome resistance from their own party as well as the opposition. So I remain highly, highly skeptical. But still, the fact that we're hearing about it and the fact that there is movement – this is always good.
And you're totally on the money. I look forward to the day when more states allow carry of firearms inside of them, but do not require a permission slip at all. I look forward to that being that there's more of those than there are without, just like how it is an oddity if your state is like here in Massachusetts, where they might deny you just because they feel like it. And they have the power to do that. Is most states, the vast majority of states, if you apply for your concealed carry license, unless they have a reason, unless you have done something bad, they will give you that license so long as you comply with all the other parts of that license, if it may need training or fees.
Yes, that is what's known as shall issue, because they shall issue it to you unless they can prove why they shouldn't.
Yep.
As opposed to may issue, which is, mother, may I? No, you may not. Okay.
Yep, I literally walked into the Medford Police Department and spoke to a secretary, not a sworn peace officer, a secretary, and said, I would like a gun permit. And she said, what permit do you like? I said, you know what? Look, why don't you give me the one that's the concealed carry one? And she said, oh, we don't issue those. And at no point in time did I mention my name. She did not know who I was, but she knew the answer was no. And that is often how may issue works.
All right, so on to our segments. David is back to tell us more about fitting smaller cartridges into larger firearms, this time by swapping parts. Senpai noticed me, but what's in the bag?
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In a previous segment, I talked about cartridges that share enough common features to be used in a single firearm. These were mostly revolvers and other manually operated firearms. While I did cover some part swapping options, these were also mostly involving revolvers. In this segment, I'd like to talk about similar options for semi-automatic and other repeating firearms. Due to the physics involved, this will almost solely deal with parts replacement. Keep in mind that not only can this get expensive fast, but it may also require a certain amount of part fitting. A regularly repeated concept throughout the metallic cartridge era is a set of parts that will allow the use of 22 long rifle rounds in a centerfire firearm. Whether to reduce training expenses or increase versatility, this long-standing idea has some value. The Colt Ace 22 conversion was one of the first successful options for use in a semi-automatic firearm. In this case, the normally 45 ACP Colt 1911 and 1911 A1 pistols. These conversion kits came with a lightened slide, a barrel, ejector, barrel bushing, recoil spring guide, recoil spring plug, slide stop, and magazine, and could be used with any government model 1911. Actual Colt-branded kits are collector's items and priced accordingly. However, there are other options on the market for converting semi-automatic pistols to rimfire. Among others, Advantage Arms offers a variety of kits for several different pistols. Price-wise, these may equal or even exceed the price of a dedicated budget 22 pistol. The Glock Parts, Brownells, and Midway USA websites list this brand as well as others. Similar attempts have been tried with semi-automatic centerfire rifles, and by far the most common today are those for America's rifle, the AR-15. I have an earlier model made by CMMG, and it works quite well, turning any 223 or 556 AR into a rimfire rifle suitable for training or small game hunting. All that's required is the bolt chamber replacement and a magazine. The more recent versions of this kit lock back the bolt when empty, something my older one doesn't do. Other options are inserts and chamber adapters, like those made for many years by Sports Specialties, now MCA Sports. These can be a much more economical option, but won't cycle a repeating action. Inserts are for use in single-shot and break-action rifles and shotguns, and incorporate a chamber and short length of rifled barrel, usually around 10 inches, that fit inside the chamber and barrel of the parent firearm. A selection of these in popular calibers could make a single-shot or double-barrel shotgun very versatile indeed. However, at $95 each, the cost would add up quickly. Chamber adapters, however, are the size and shape of a cartridge case and are generally for cartridges of similar bullet diameter. Inserts can be used for almost any caliber smaller than the host firearm and can be more easily used in repeating firearms. I bought one of MCA's more budget-friendly chamber adapters that allows me to shoot 32 Auto and 32 Smith & Wesson in my 30-30 Marlin. It's reasonably accurate and will be useful for small game at moderate ranges. There are versions of these inserts that stay in the chamber of the parent firearm. They're often used in temporarily converting a repeating .30-06 rifle to .308, for example. Finally, there are options to fire more than one centerfire caliber from semi-automatic pistols. This involves the purchase of spare barrels at a bare minimum, and possibly recoil springs and magazines as well. For example, buying a Glock, or the new Smith & Wesson M&P, in 10mm would potentially enable use of barrels in .40 Smith & Wesson, .357 SIG, and 9mm. Similarly, a pistol in .40 Smith & Wesson could potentially use barrels in .357 SIG and 9mm. It's important to get the right initial pistol to start the process. Always get the largest caliber in the family first, and work down from there. I used the word potentially a moment ago because some caliber barrels have different external dimensions and won't mix and match with all slides. Having to buy an entire upper half of a gun, slide barrel, and probably recoil spring really puts this on the wrong side of a cost-benefit analysis. There are also custom barrels for Wildcat or limited production cartridges such as 460 Roland, which can be used with many 45 ACP pistols, and 30 Luger, which can be used with the 40 Smith & Wesson and 9mm family of pistols. Obviously, this is not a budget-friendly option. So that covers the semi-automatic side of the world of caliber versatility. Hopefully this information was both interesting and useful. Good luck and safe shooting.
That just sounds awesome.
Gun nut for life.
Sure you are.
I'm pretty sure he is.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments, or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook or MeWe pages, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. I'm also a contributor on the Blue Collar Prepping blog, which can be found at bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Oh, him talking about the 460 Roland. I got my M&P 45 specifically so I could convert it over to 460 Roland, and I just haven't done it. And the 460 Roland people don't seem to offer the conversion kit, and I'm gonna need to call them up and see what the story was. They used to make one, and now they don't. But since David didn't talk about the ballistics, essentially, it's a 45 ACP cartridge, but it's loaded up to high enough pressure that it's producing 44 Magnum muzzle energy, and it can be run in any 45 ACP sized pistol with just modifications of recoil, spring, and barrel. And the idea that I could have a 10+1 double stack 44 Magnum, a set equivalent gun. It's like a Desert Eagle, but not as goofy as a Desert Eagle is. Because if you've ever handled a Desert Eagle, as soon as you look at it and go, man, that is a really cool looking gun. And then you pick it up and go,
ow, my wrist.
Why would anyone do this?
Yeah, because I picked one up and it was just, oh my God, that's heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy, it's big. And have you ever shot one, Aaron?
No, I have not.
Let me tell you, if you have, actually, I've read somewhere that there's actually a technique that is unique to firing the Desert Eagle, where you actually shoot it very similar to how you would shoot a shoulder rifle, where you lock your arm and let the gun kind of roll into your shoulder, essentially let the energy roll into your shoulder. And that will prevent it from jamming because the action is so outlandishly long. Because, of course, you know, 44 Magnum, 357 Magnum, 50 Action Express, etc. They're big, long cartridges. And so the action needs to be able to clear those. And so since the action is so long, the possibility that you will be able to catch that cartridge in a stovepipe jam as it's recoiling is very, very high. And I have had multiple stovepipe jams with Desert Eagles.
I mean, didn't you just describe the Chapman stance?
Kind of, but yeah, but essentially I think the key is to try to keep the muzzle down as hard as you can and try to keep it as a reciprocating motion instead of letting the gun roll up like how many people shoot big bore revolvers. Either way, like I said, a 460 Roland conversion, you can make something like a Desert Eagle, but it is not a boat anchor heavy jam-o-matic gun that costs you thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's just cool.
You know, it's really too bad that the Thompson submachine gun is no longer manufactured, because I think it would be funny if there was a company out there that rechambered it in 460 Roland and named the model Headless.
Oh, I love Warren Zevon. I mean, Car Arms is still making, you know, the semi-auto ones, but I think your point is it needs to have the giggle switch.
Well, yeah. For people who had no idea what I'm talking about, there's a song called Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. And so if you've got a Thompson that's chambered in 460 Roland, called Headless. I thought it was funny.
I laughed. It was hilarious. And okay. I think you remember that there was a period of time where my daughter would not go to sleep until she had heard Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. Enough that my parents one time called me at like 8 o'clock at night saying, "What's the name of the song Roland Was a Warrior?" so they could ask their Alexa to play it for them. Yes, my daughter, when she was a little tiny baby, I'm just like rocking her and singing her songs. And I'm like, why do I got to be singing Baba Black Sheep? She doesn't speak English. She doesn't understand what I'm saying. She's just hearing daddy's soothing voice. And I'm like, Rolling the Headless Thompson Gunner, that's a cool song. I'm going to sing that. And it stuck. Also, David talks about converting 40 Smith & Wesson guns and just the versatility of that, of like, if you had a 40 Smith & Wesson gun, all you would need is a barrel swap to chamber it in 357 SIG, and then I think it's barrel extractor and possibly recoil spring and magazine to go down to 9mm. And a lot of people make 9mm barrels that have a thicker wall so that it is the same outside diameter as a 40 Smith & Wesson barrel. And it's only time will tell if the new 30 Super Carry people start coming up with conversion kits for those, since it appears to be able to fit in any 9mm sized gun. And so if that can be converted over, that might be an interest to some people, even though, as I was explaining to Aaron the other day, it's pretty much a munchkin round. It's going to give you a little less performance than the 9mm, but a little bit more capacity. And in the end, what do you carry for your reload when you're carrying your Glock? Do you carry the 15 rounders?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you could switch over your gun to 30 Super Carry, deal with more expensive, harder to find ammunition and the money it costs to do the conversion, or just carry some bigger magazines.
I mean, I already carry a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. I think it might be interesting in the fact that there's kind of an arms race with the small major caliber pistol makers, with like the SIG 365 and the Springfield Hellcat and the Ruger Max 9. I don't even remember all. It seems like every 5 minutes. I know I was getting my Shooting Illustrated magazines in, and like for like 3 months in a row, it was a double stack pocketable 9mm pistol on the cover, because everyone's making one. So yeah, the idea that and some of them are trying to fit like one more. Oh, this one holds 11. It goes up to 11. And so the idea that you could put 30 Super Carry into it, and it would carry that much more, might really induce an arms race as well.
So this is where I make like that African man with the expressive frown and the big hands, and I point to magazine extensions exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got a 17 rounder for my pistol, and it's got a +2 extension on it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, back
it's a thing. And then with one in the pipe, I've got a Glock 26 that now has 20 rounds in it. Ooh.
Yep, I am super ticked off that Massachusetts will not let me have big boy magazines because, yeah, they make 15 round magazines for my 365. So the idea that I could carry 11 rounds in the gun in my pocket, but then have another 15 rounds in the other pocket just ready to go, why wouldn't you do that? And so, yeah, I certainly do not see myself in the immediate future getting one, especially since I live in Massachusetts, so I'm limited in capacity. So instead, I'm going the other way around and just getting bigger bullets that will fit into my 10 round magazines instead of worrying about how many rounds I can fit into the gun. If I can only carry 10, I'm going to make them gigantic.
Well, then why don't you carry a Deagle with 50 round or 50 caliber?
Because I don't like walking in circles.
But just think, if you needed an emergency boat anchor, you'd have one.
Everyone sees my car, and you can tell which car Weird drives, because that's the one slanted over to the driver's side. Ever so often you see in the open carry rallies, you see somebody carrying a Desert Eagle, and hilarious, it's almost always in a garbage nylon holster too. I think there needs to be a law. If you're open carrying a Desert Eagle, it needs to be in a nylon sausage sack. So having nothing to do with nylon sausage sacks, that's the best segue ever. John Stewart is back. This time he's got a web series called The Problem with John Stewart. And this is good news because it gives us a taste of what I think we've all been missing since he left The Daily Show. The bad news is he's using to spread anti-gun propaganda. It's time again to Fisk another comedian. I occasionally Fisk a comedian talking about gun control who's just politically pontificating and is in no way funny. Or people like Trevor Noah, who were amazing comedians, but suddenly felt that made them expert political pundits. This, on the other hand, is a Fisk of the great Jon Stewart, who is not only an amazing comedian, as well as the only host of The Daily Show worth a remark, but also a very accomplished actor, director, and author. And while I disagree with the subject matter, this episode of his new web series, The Problem with Jon Stewart, is legitimately funny. And while I will preserve some of the joke in this Fisk to be fair and respectful to the craft, this Fisk is going to destroy much of the comedic timing and delivery of the segment. So I suggest you all go to the show notes and watch the episode and laugh despite of the issue I'm about to dissect.
Yes, we've lost the war on guns. Personally, I knew it was over after Sandy Hook. We had a chance to pick guns or kindergartners, and we went with guns.
First issue is that the war isn't over. Joe Biden is still making comments about banning guns and restricting our Second Amendment rights. Lawmakers on both sides of the state and federal level are still submitting bills that restrict our rights to ban our property. The ATF is still issuing rulings that may take guns away from us. And still, politicians fight about real common sense gun laws, like repealing the NFA and removing the need to have a permit to keep and bear arms. But another issue is we didn't choose between kindergartners and guns. We choose between boilerplate gun control and sanity. And sanity won. See, gun control makes its most dynamic appearance right after tragic events. Not because a problem in our laws is discovered, but because there are hopes that our heightened emotions will get the best of our better judgment. See, the Sandy Hook shooting, the killer murdered his own mother to gain access to the gun safe where he took a rifle and a pistol. The killer was 20 at the time, so possession of that pistol was illegal. As was stealing the car he stole, and then carrying those stolen guns in said stolen car, he went to a school where no guns are allowed, illegally gained access to that school, and committed murders. I have my doubts that any of the presented gun laws could have stopped this. And Democrats decided to fight hardest over Michael Bloomberg's universal background check bill in the aftermath of that shooting. a shooting where the guns were stolen. So yeah, the kids had nothing to do with gun control agenda. Their blood was just used to grease the skids.
There are 393 million guns in America. And I don't want to be judgy, but I think it's gotten absurd.
Hunting season has arrived. Diamond hunting season, that is. If you have your sights set on this, you can get this free from Leanne's Fine Jewelry.
Every kill begins with K.
Okay, this is just funny. But you probably find that ad just as funny as I do. I mean, how often do you actually see guns used as marketing tools? Especially in unrelated things like jewelry, or opening a bank account, or buying a new car. But now, a hunting group or a Second Amendment group raffling off a rifle or a pistol isn't going to get much of a laugh. Because those things make sense, and they're insanely more common.
The problem with guns is that there's too many of them. And while research clearly shows more guns, more deaths.
Okay, the graph he's showing is a lie. The numbers he's citing are gun deaths, not deaths in general. As I've said countless times, the bulk of those deaths are suicide, which A, have little to do with the guns, and B, standard gun control solutions like background checks and magazine restrictions or assault weapons bans have zero effect on suicides. Also, those gun death numbers are bogus because that data is shown from the cherry-picked data set of high-income countries in the G8 who use the metric system and stand on one foot. Because if you look at the global map of violent crime, murder, and death, you'll find that all the nations listed on John's graph are all super safe nations. And there are lots of countries that don't appear on the graph that are very, very, very dangerous places, respectively. The common anti-gun argument is, those nations are low income. To which I point out that if you're extremely poor, why are you buying guns? Honestly, the gun crime in Colombia, Honduras, or Nigeria should hold extra weight since the guns are so expensive and money is so scarce.
To stop a bad guy with a gun, it takes a good guy with a gun.
Yes. Why didn't I think of that? Shootouts.
I don't get where his incredulity comes from. In many cases where bad guys are doing bad things with guns, good people with guns stop them. As much as I dislike Wayne LaPierre, this is a great line. It's not only factually true, but it also shows the natural neutrality of firearms. A monster indeed may commit mass murder with a gun, and a police officer or an armed citizen may stop that monster with their gun. I carry a gun to do good. Others carry guns to do evil. Some people hang guns on the walls as inert art and do nothing.
One question, very quickly. How can you tell who's a good guy? You know what? Maybe I guess just ask them. I'm sure people are generally honest about that.
I was a good guy on the street. Sure, the beast killer, he'll tell you I was always a good guy.
OJ gets a gun. Probably fine. Not his weapon of choice, allegedly. You know.
Again, really funny. I will first note that Stewart opened with talking about Sandy Hook. The killer there had no criminal background. Same goes with most spree killers. Also, for further irony, O.J. Simpson did own guns. Since I'm pretty open about my love of the FAL pattern rifle, many friends have sent me the pictures of O.J. Simpson posing with his FNFAL. And yet he still murdered his ex-wife and her boyfriend with a knife. So yeah, O.J. did have a gun. And it's not nearly as famous as what O.J. did with a knife.
Don't let somebody tell you themselves. They're probably going to lie. References. Because everyone's going to say they're a good guy. Maybe you know if a guy is good, if a different good guy gives him a vouch.
There's a guy I'd like to really thank here that people don't thank enough, but there's a kindly, wonderful, gentle man that we all deeply love. His name is Harvey Weinstein.
Again, right for the jugular, John. Bravo. But still, Harvey Weinstein is guilty of rape and sexual assault, and at no point did he use physical force to take advantage of those women. For Weinstein, it was mostly threatening people's career. And it isn't limited to him. Just about every sexual harassment class you have to take at work mentions that boss who requests sex in exchange for employment or promotion. To bring the mood down even further, I unfortunately know a lot of women who were raped or sexually assaulted. Not one of them was threatened with a weapon, let alone a gun. So while this does point out that character references can be flawed, this example also has nothing to do with guns or gun control. Well, one thing. Harvey Weinstein was a huge proponent of gun control and a massive donor to anti-gun lobby groups. I wonder why Harvey Weinstein would be so invested in women and their loved ones not having access to guns.
Terrorists, they shouldn't have guns.
A loophole in federal gun laws allows suspected terrorists to buy guns here in the U.S., and they have.
What the f***? If you're on the terrorist watch list, you can have a gun?
This is a huge issue for me. I was in Boston when the Marathon bombs exploded. The brothers who built and set those bombs were not on the terror watch list. The Pulse nightclub killer self-identified himself as a terrorist and also had a Florida concealed carry permit and an armed security guard license and was not on the terror watch list. Meanwhile, you read about 8-year-old Boy Scouts and politicians and other people who are obviously not terrorists on that list, and it's clear that the list is useless and shouldn't exist in the first place.
Okay. What about registered sex offenders? Turns out sex offenders apparently also need guns. So
this is a little misleading. No, federally as far as I know, and locally also, being on the sex offender registry does not expressly prohibit you from owning a gun. But being a felon does. We were just talking about Harvey Weinstein, who will likely die in prison. But if he does get out, he will never be allowed to own a gun because of his crimes. There might be a few crimes that get you on the sex offender registry, but aren't felonies. I'm not a legal expert, but I suspect those are non-violent and minor offenses. So you're really that concerned about a guy who got caught urinating on the side of the road and the police decided to throw the book at him? So now he's on the sexual offender registry, but he's not a felon, and you're worried that he may also be able to now buy a gun? Not as much of an issue for me.
We obviously can't agree on who the good guys are, and we can't seem to agree on who the bad guys are.
Really? I think it's pretty easy to know who the good guys and the bad guys are. The hard part is how to tell when someone is going bad before they actually go bad. And that's something I think nobody has an answer for.
It's not a sci-fi Tom Cruise movie where we have some magical premonition of which bad guys are about to commit a violent crime and can intervene in the crime before it's too late. Or is it?
It appears a domestic dispute led to the massacre at a Texas church that left at least 26 people dead. The gunman had a history of domestic violence.
So he's about to make a very interesting point. But the shooter at the Texas church isn't one you want to hang your hat on. Not only was the killer a convicted domestic abuser, but he fractured the skull of a baby in a domestic dispute. Not only did the Air Force fail to report his domestic abuse status when he was convicted, but they never charged him with attempted murder for violently assaulting a baby. And they should have, given the severity of those injuries. So a good data point that those who harm their loved ones are more likely to harm strangers as well. But it's not a simple case, to say the least.
So why are we letting these wife-beating cop killers get away with literal mass murder?
He's saying this in relation to the statistic of domestic violence offenders committing other violent crimes. So while the cop-killing bit is correct, they aren't mass murderers. Because we don't just collect individual unrelated murders and call it mass murder. And unless John has some info I don't have, we aren't letting them get away with anything. For the statistic to even exist, the subjects need to have been convicted of domestic abuse. And I've yet to hear of a murderer who wasn't charged simply because he was a wife beater in his last conviction. If we were to discuss maybe harsher sentences, stricter post-conviction monitoring, or increased penalties for domestic abusers, we'd have something to talk about. But John isn't talking about this. He's talking about gun control.
By the way, the law already says domestic violence offenders can't have guns. If we just enforced that law, we would prevent other types of gun violence, the kind that actually makes the news. It's not a solution, but it's a real harm reduction model for gun violence.
And here's the issue with gun control. Here in Massachusetts, I'm saddled with all sorts of absurd gun control regulations. But the drug dealers in Boston don't care. And the cops don't either. Gun control is almost always a system that is hard on lawful gun owners and people who generally want to play by the rules, and easy on the people who are dangerous criminals who don't play by any rules. We so rarely enforce laws we already have that the constant call for more laws is deeply ironic.
Mr. NRA, you have a better solution on the table?
Arm America's women.
Go f*** yourself.
I mean, I feel the same way about Wayne LaPierre, though likely for different reasons. That being said, what's wrong with this solution? Police rarely stop crimes. They respond to and investigate crimes. And as I said above, police don't enforce the laws equally. So if that's all true, why would somebody not want to be armed? Especially a woman who would be at a physical disadvantage against most men. This is a really big issue with anti-gun people. Their starting point is guns are icky and there's no good reason to own one. And they're often firm on that position. So when the benefits of firearms ownership are brought up, they dismiss it as lies and outright insanity. Oh well, these Fisks are here to inoculate you against the anti-gun talking points so that you have thoughtful rebuttals and hopefully can get a few anti-gunners to start asking the right questions. I think in making my point, I just kind of said my sign-off. So those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
I mean, I know you said that you thought he was really funny, and this is where I disagree. I don't think he's funny at all. I mean, he was funny back in the day, you know, 20 some odd years ago. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think he's just a little too, oh, look at me, I'm making him funny, aren't I clever? Of course, he's still preferable to, what's his name, Colbert.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Colbert, I haven't seen much of Colbert before he adopted his persona. I've seen a couple of bits of him on the Dana Carvey show, which was very, very short-lived anyway. But yeah, ever since he adopted the persona of a conservative pundit, as I've said before, you know, if you're doing a mockery of someone, there needs to be a little bit of love in the mockery. And I don't see any of that in Colbert. And so I find him extremely tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, also, I will say that I made the little reference to Trevor Noah. I looked up some of his pre-Daily Show stand-up bits. And oh, my God, some of his comedy, especially some the ones talking about him living back in Africa, especially specifically where he was speaking whichever Bantu language his mom spoke. I forget which one it was, but he speaks a click an African click language, and he works that into his comedy, and it's hilarious. I strongly recommend everyone to look it up, because boy, when he wanted to, he really could be funny. He clearly doesn't want to be funny when he's on The Daily Show, because he sucks on that. And I still greatly enjoyed Jon Stewart, especially sandwiched between him and what was the dude before Jon Stewart? I'm trying to, tall blonde guy. He wasn't funny either. We'll leave it at that. Tall blonde guy, not funny. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/AssortedCalibersPodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
I've got a blog. It's called weirdworld.com, and you can hear me on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You know where I am. You can find me, or don't. I don't care.
And she's pretty there. You're also pretty where you're not, too, just to how it goes. But that's the truth. And what's also pretty is Nate Spencer's music.
He thinks Jon Stewart is funny, and I don't. Our tastes are different, really. That's it. Our tastes are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Can you believe Aaron doesn't like the punk music of Gigi Allen?
I don't care for ska either. Or dubstep.